In the name of our God, who is Father, God who is Son, and God who is Holy Spirit. Amen. Please go ahead and be seated. So, I'm the oldest of seven children. And when I got to high school, my folks had enough resources for two cars, one of which was leased, and the terms of the lease were that only the two parent adults could drive the car. So my folks said to me, if you ever want to use the other car, then you have to ask several weeks in advance in order to be in the priority queue. So, but if you have a date, we'll try and give you extra preference. So, some babies pretty up, and some of us don't. And I'm not exactly, Adonis, so I didn't oftentimes have dates, but I wanted to use the car. So I'd tell my parents I had a date every couple of weeks or so. That comforted them, and I got the car. And one of the things I liked to do the most was to take the car when I was solo and drive from Fort Worth to the only commercial airport in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, which was Love Field. Now, this was a few years before 9/11. I don't think that'll surprise you. And at the time, you could go through the airport, you could go through the lobby, you could go out to the gates. And at Love Field, which was kind of a split level, there was a waiting area if you weren't going to stand by the gates. And I would go up there and choose a chair right on a railing and simply spend an hour and a half or so watching people get off the airplane. I would see the tired business people, at least I assumed they were tired and not just grumpy, carrying the big satchels because there weren't the armbands at the time, and they would be with furrowed brow walking off of the plane, hurrying who knows where. I would watch kids get off with haggard parents, and the kids are smiling and dancing, and the parents look like they just endured a haunted house that they didn't want to have gone to. I would sit and simply observe all of that, and then I would ask the questions, I wonder what's going on with them, and I came up with all kinds of stories. Today's gospel shows Jesus in Jerusalem, where he's been for some days. He's had the triumphal entry that we celebrate on Palm Sunday. He's gone in and out of the temple on a daily basis. While there, he's engaged in arguments with religious leaders. While there, he upended the buyers and sellers and confronted those who had turned what was supposed to be a house of prayer into a house of commerce. While there, he's pointed out the incredible, magnificent stones of a structure far larger than this beautiful structure and said, someday it's all coming down again. While there, he engaged in side conversations with his disciples in order to teach them. But when we get to the last portion of today's gospel lesson, Jesus simply does what I did at Love Field. He goes out away from the portico, the outer courtyard of the temple, to a place where he simply sits with his disciples, and the Bible tells us he observes those who were there. Now, among those who came, there are only two groups of people categorized in the gospel lesson. The one group is a group of people who came for whatever reason. This is during a festival where Jewish people were supposed to come to Jerusalem from no matter where they lived in order to celebrate the festival in Jerusalem. And as they came in, there was a place where they could give an offering. This is different than the animal sacrifices they would give. This is simply an offering for the temple, a basin into which they put monies. One category of people were those who placed money, and the Bible tells us Jesus observed about them that they gave out of excess. In other words, they had plenty more where that came from. And then one woman catches Jesus' attention, and he decides to remark about it. I actually think Jesus is mentoring his disciples on the highly beneficial habit of being quiet and simply observing people. And then he's going to ask us what we see. Did we see through people, or did we see people? Jesus sees this widow. Now, there are a number of things we're not told about the widow. We're not told whether she's one of the out-of-town pilgrims who's come up for the festival. We're not told whether she had already spent what little money she might have had besides two coins in order to have lodging on the way, or whether she's like those that we get to see at Lord of the Streets who spent the night on the side of the road someplace because she had so little. We're not told whether she's a widow who lives in town. What we know about widows at the time is that widows had no living and they had not been provided for. And so they got by as best they could as a person on the margin of even Jewish society. We're not told whether in order to be able to eat, she took a job, for instance, as a domestic laborer for a wage that wasn't quite livable. All we're told is she had but two coins left to her name, and the value of those coins was less than a penny. Jesus, watching all of these people come in to the courtyard of the temple, sees her place the two pennies and knows that she has just parted with everything to her name. So he turns to his disciples and he says, "Did you see? Did you see?" Willie is a man who came to Lord of the Streets, I'll call him Willie, 9 months ago. He came to Lord of the Streets because one of our volunteers who does referrals for us listens to people's stories, lets them know of resources that they qualify for that we at Lord of the Streets might be able to provide them, or resources we can't provide but we know of other organizations or entities that do. She was coming down Highway 59 near Interstate 10 and noticed a man crawl out from under the overpass up at the top ledge right under the roadway. And what was remarkable to her was there was nobody else staying under that particular overpass. She saw him one day, and then she saw him the next day, and the third day she saw him was in the morning, and he had come down and was stretching, trying to get everything back in place, like I did the first time I ever went on a camp out and had to spend the night sleeping on the ground with no cushion under me. And then she noticed when he walked, he was bent over and had a shuffling gait. And having observed for three now episodes, she pulled over, parked her car, and came over to talk. She engaged him in conversation sufficient to be able to say, I noticed a little bit of a struggle walking. Can you tell me about that?" And she heard the story of a bad back that had happened through an accident. And so she said, "You know, I'm part of a place called Lord of the Streets. And among other things, we have a health clinic. And while you're waiting, you can get some coffee or water, but we would be happy to have one of our medical personnel look at you. Maybe that could help." That was on a Thursday. The next Monday before 8 o'clock, Willie was in line outside Lord of the Streets. Willie got an appointment with the clinic. While he was in the clinic and they were able to give him a shot and suggest some movements to help him, the doctor asked, "I noticed that you have some dental needs. When was the last time you went to a dentist?" And he said, 6 years ago. He said, "Well, we can get you to a dentist," and handed him something and noticed Willie looking at it a little bit oddly. And he said, "Do you like to read?" And Willie said, "Yeah, I love to read, but I can't. My glasses got broken and I can't see." The doctor said, "Well, you know, Lord of the Streets has a vision clinic too." And on Thursday he came back and got an eye test and got a pair of loaner magnification glasses while he waited for an appointment with the University of Houston to get prescription glasses that were just his lens necessities. And then he found out that there was a Bible study, and he went to the Bible study, and then he heard there was a worship service. He's never been in the sanctuary of Trinity Church, but he knows about Trinity Church. Because at Lord of the Streets, we talk about being the grateful recipients of the generosity and vision of Trinity Church. A few weeks after, he was coming now every day of the week from where he was living. We were able to help him get some temporary housing. He asked us if there was anything he could do. He began to clean up trash around the outside of the building, and some of you are saying, "May his tribe increase." And then he asked if he could come early and get the hose and clean off the wall where people urinate during the night on Francis Street. A few weeks later, we began to find envelopes near the front desk area where people come and check in. The first time it had $1.17. The next week we found an envelope, plain white, small envelope. It had $1.41. The third week it was back to 87 cents. But every week an envelope appeared. And then one day he came in and he had a screwdriver set. And he said, "Well, I thought you all could use a screwdriver set." And then he brought in another tool that he noticed that the maintenance man didn't have a very good one. And it turns out he finally fessed up. Not only was he buying these at pawn shops that he had found, but he was the one providing the money. And when I asked him why, Willie looked at me and he said, "Well, I can't help it, Pastor. I came to God in prison." I said, "Oh, you came to God in prison?" He said, "Yes." I said, "How did prison get to be one of your destinations?" And he said, "My mother gave me up when I was 7 months old. Eventually, I was given to my grandparents, who abused me physically, sexually, emotionally. And then when I was in high school, my grandfather committed a crime, and they lied about it and told the police that I had done it, and I spent 12 years in prison." He said, "I came to God, but I had never had anybody do what Lord of the Streets has done. You welcome me every day. You tell me you're glad to see me. You call me by name. Some of you put your arm around and give me a hug. And not only that, all the gifts you've given me, you tell me that I'm so worthwhile I could give back." He said, "I can't help but give. God's been so good to me." You know, in the world, some people are takers. The book of Proverbs says that the leech has two daughters. Give, give. As if we can never get enough. For some people, I hear it regularly, you can never get enough shoes. My wife happens to be a part-time real estate agent. The biggest change in the last 30 years in the construction of new homes is to have walk-in closets that are bigger than the garage. And about half of them are for endless rows of shoes. For some of us, we can't get enough shoes. For some of us, we can't get enough clothes. For those of us who have been listening to advertisements or financial advisors for the last 30 years, we can't get enough money to make it through retirement. And I confess that for most of my life, I've been a taker. I've been a taker who circled whenever I got invited to a party and there was a particular food item I really liked. I was unbelievably ingenious at finding ways to circle back around the table in search of that one before somebody else got another one. Some of us are takers and some people are givers. Some congregations are givers also. Trinity Church has both individuals who are givers, and as a congregation, you have chosen to be givers. Most of you know something of the history of Lord of the Streets, a special evangelistic mission of the Diocese of Texas, whose mission was established to address holistically the needs of the homeless, who were increasing in numbers in the central business district of downtown and in Midtown. I like to tell the story this way. I don't think it's revisionist history. A little over 28 years ago, a fairly wealthy congregation, Trinity Church Midtown, where people then dressed up a little bit more than they dress up today, became the target of homeless men and women who were looking for handouts and thought that they'd hit up a well-to-do church because their experience is people are uncomfortable with the homeless and they'd like them to go away as quickly as possible, and if a dollar will do that or $5 will do it, so be it. It's worth the price of your departure. But Trinity Church chose not to do that. Instead of asking a question based on fear, how can we get rid of them, they asked a question based on faith, Lord, what would you have us do with these, our neighbors? And eventually, a church that was suitable for the homeless who didn't come necessarily from a background of a liturgical expression. A church that would be their own, where you would neither have to dress up your clothes nor dress up your story, was formed within Trinity. Instead of requiring them to come to your 8 o'clock or 10:30 or 12:30, you said, where can we find space to provide an opportunity for you where you're comfortable instead of aware of the distinctions between you and those in the pews next to you? And now for 28 years, Trinity Church has sacrificially provided this sanctuary, sacrificially provided all of the altar linens for the Sunday service, sacrificially provided the security guards who come early in the morning to open up, sacrificially provide lights and heat and cooling, sacrificially provide the fellowship hall at no cost without requiring us to clean it up before you get in there on Sundays, sacrificially provided the kitchen, sacrificially provided all of the food that is given to feed on Sunday mornings for upwards of 210 people, sacrificially provided cook teams who come like on Thanksgiving morning or the day before Thanksgiving to do an entire meal. Trinity Church has chosen to be among those who are givers and not takers. And not only that, there are individuals in Trinity Church, among whom I'll name just one. Her name is Linda Wise Davenport. Not only does she give generously here at the church, she is now found at Lord of the Streets Sunday mornings at 6 o'clock, now for years. And every weekday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, a minimum of 3 days a week, Linda is over there, serves as the chair of our Emergency Clothing and Hygiene Center. She has just, in the last month, taken on being one of the co-facilitators of a 12-step group for Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. She's not a widow at this point. But she knows that giving is not just a matter of money, it's a matter of heart and time and labor. Francis of Assisi said it was his experience that it's in giving that we receive, not in grabbing. Francis, of course, knew nothing of the temptations of an internet and Amazon. What he did know was that his heart was filled when he was able to provide for the needs of others instead of looking primarily to provide for the needs of himself. And in that, he had Jesus as an example. For the Son of God, the Son of Man, came not to be served, but to serve. And Francis believed there was greater joy in emulating Jesus' selflessness sacrificially than in protecting his and his own. The Apostle Paul said, "It is more blessed to give than to receive." Trinity Church is in a season where you're being asked, will you again commit in the name of him who has promised to give all that we need, even if it's not all that we want? Will you again commit to being sacrificial in giving in order that the numbers of people named Willie will have their lives transformed through your generosity? And I suspect the Lord of heaven and earth will sit back and observe and applaud those who, whether out of their excess or out of their little, choose to say, I want to cultivate a habit of giving more than I feed the habit